noble intentions were rewarded with an equestrian statue and a daughter of the emperor. It was more difficult to trust the fidelity of Crispus, whose recent services were recompensed by the command of the Cappadocian army. His arrogance soon provoked and seemed to excuse the ingratitude of his new sovereign. In the presence of the Senate, the son-in-law of Phocas was condemned to embrace the monastic life, and the sentence was justified by the weighty observation of Heraclius that the man who had betrayed his father could never be faithful to his friend. Of the characters conspicuous in history, that of Heraclius is one of the most extraordinary and inconsistent. In the first of the last years of a long reign, the emperor appears to be the slave of sloth, of pleasure, or of superstition, the careless and impotent spectator of the public calamities. But the languid mists of the morning and evening are separated by the brightness of the meridian sun. The Arcadius of the palace arose the Caesar of the camp, and the honour of Rome and Heraclius was gloriously retrieved by the exploits and trophies of six adventurous campaigns. It was the duty of the Byzantine historians to have revealed the causes of his slumber and vigilance. At this distance, we could only conjecture that he was endowed with more personal courage than political resolution, that he was detained by the charms and perhaps the arts of his niece Martina, with whom, after the death of Eudocia, he contracted an incestuous marriage, and that he yielded to the base advice of the counselors who urged, as a fundamental law, that the life of the emperor should never be exposed in the field.
Heraclius fought a long and hard campaign against the king of Persia, Chosroes, venturing as far as what today is Iraq, entering the city of Isfahan, where no Roman emperor had previously set foot. There, Chosroes's forces surrounded Heraclius, who defeated the Persians, chasing them into the fortified cities of Medina and Assyria. Eventually, they met again on the battlefield at Nineveh.
In the Battle of Nineveh, which was fiercely fought from daybreak to the 11th hour, 28 standards, besides those which might be broken or torn, were taken from the Persians. The greatest part of their army was cut in pieces, and the victors, concealing their own loss, passed the night on the field. They acknowledged that on this occasion it was less difficult to kill than to discomfit the soldiers of Chosroes. Amidst the bodies of their friends, no more than two bowshot from the enemy, the remnant of the Persian cavalry stood firm till the 7th hour of the night. About the 8th hour, they retired to their unrifled camp, collected their baggage, and dispersed on all sides from the want of orders rather than of resolution. The diligence of Heraclius was not less admirable in the use of victory. By a march of 48 miles in 420 hours, his vanguard occupied the bridges of the great and the lesser Zab, and the cities and palaces of Assyria were opened for the first time to the Romans. It was still in the power of Chosroes to obtain a reasonable peace, and he was repeatedly pressed by the messengers of Heraclius to spare the blood of his subjects, and to relieve a humane conqueror from the painful duty of carrying fire and sword through the fairest countries of Asia. But the pride of the Persian had not yet sunk to the level of his fortune. He derived a momentary confidence from the retreat of the emperor. He wept with impotent rage over the ruins of his Assyrian palaces, and disregarded too long the rising murmurs of the nation who complained that their lives and fortunes were sacrificed to the obstinacy of an old man. That unhappy old man was himself tortured with the sharpest pains both of mind and body, and in the consciousness of his approaching end, he resolved to fix the tiara on the head of Merdaza, the most favored of his sons. But the will of Chosroes was no longer revered, and Siroes, who gloried in the rank and merit of his mother Sira, had conspired with the malcontents to assert and anticipate the rights of primogeniture. 22 satraps, they styled themselves patriots, were tempted by the wealth and honors of a new reign. To the soldiers, the heir of Chosroes promised an increase of pay. To the Christians, the free exercise of their religion. To the captives, liberty and rewards. And to the nation, instant peace and the reduction of taxes. It was determined by the conspirators that Siroes, with the
在线英语听力室，感谢您的收听，请记住我们的网址 www.thingroom.com。